Good morning. Welcome to our book pick segment for this week. We talked to our good friends Connie Brooks and Kate Reed from Battenkill Books in Cambridge, New York for our book list. They have traveled around the literary globe to collect these wonderful tomes. After spending lots of time looking through and reading books and studying up, Connie and Kate join us this Tuesday morning with a terrific list of books to share. And it's a great pleasure to welcome both of them to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for inviting us down.
Always great seeing you. So, where would you like to begin?
Well, I'm going to start with a new book by Louise Erdrich, which is a novel called La Rose. La Rose is set in North Dakota in the late summer of 1999. Landreau Iron is out stalking a deer along the edge of his property, which also happens to be the borderline between the Indian reservation and the white lands that neighbor the reservation. He takes aim and shoots, but when the buck that he's been stalking all season springs away, Landreau realizes he's hit something else, a blur he saw as he squeezed the trigger. When he staggers closer, he realizes he's killed his neighbor's 5-year-old son, Dusty Ravitch. Yeah. The two neighboring families have always been close, sharing food, clothing, and rides into town. Their children played together despite going to different schools. Horrified at what he's done, Landreau turns to tradition for guidance. Following an ancient means of retribution, he and his wife, Emmeline, will give La Rose, their own 5-year-old son, to the grieving parents of Dusty, Peter, and Nola. Our son will be your son now, they tell them. La Rose is quickly absorbed into his new family. Plagued by thoughts of suicide, Nola dotes on him, keeping her darkness at bay. His fierce, rebellious new sister, Maggie, welcomes him as a co-conspirator who can ease her volatile mother's terrifying moods. Gradually, he's allowed shared visits with his birth family, whose sorrow mirrors the Ravitch's own. As the years pass, La Rose becomes the linchpin linking the Irons and the Ravitches, and eventually their mutual pain begins to heal. But when a man with a long-standing grudge against Landreau begins raising trouble, hurling accusations of a cover-up the day Dusty died, he threatens the tenuous peace that has kept these two fragile families whole.
The name of the book is La Rose by Louise Erdrich. Excellent. Next,
I have The Atomic Weight of Love by Elizabeth Church. The story here is about a spirited young woman, Meridian Wallace. In 1941, at 17 years old, Meridian begins her ornithology studies at the University of Chicago. She is soon drawn to Alden Whetstone, a brilliant, complicated physics professor who opens her eyes to the fundamentals and poetry of his field, the beauty of motion, space, and time, the delicate balance of force and energy that allows a bird to fly. Entranced and in love, Meridian defers her own career path and follows Alden West to Los Alamos, where he is engaged in a secret government project, later known to be the atomic bomb. In married life, though, she feels lost and left behind. She channels her academic ambitions into studying a particular family of crows, whose independence and companionship are the very things that seem beyond her reach. Years later, at the dawn of the 1970s, Meridian meets Clay, a young geologist and veteran of the Vietnam War, and together they seek ways to mend what the world has broken. Capturing the claustrophobic eras of the 1940s and 50s in America, The Atomic Weight of Love also examines the dramatically changing roles of women during the decades that followed.
Great. And that is Atomic Weight of Love by Elizabeth Church.
Next, I have a book called The Loney by Andrew Michael Hurley. And when I was going over my notes last night at home, my husband said, be careful not to say baloney. No, it is not baloney. It is The Loney. And Chris pointed out, think of The Lone Ranger because one of the characters in the book is named Tonto.
Okay.
So The Loney is an eerie, suspenseful tale, which is getting a lot of critical attention, including words of praise from the likes of Stephen King. The story is set along a stretch of bleak coastline in northwest Britain known as The Loney. 15-year-old Tonto and his older brother Hanny, along with their parents, are on their annual pilgrimage. Every year they stay at an old house along the coast from which they can visit the nearby shrine, where it is hoped that Hanny, who suffers from an unnamed condition, might be cured. Add in some distinctly unfriendly locals and a creepy rich couple across the water, and you have all the ingredients for a wholly unsettling tale. Faith, superstition, strange and uncanny rituals all play a role in the Loni, and as an ominous story plays out. Now, 40 years later, Tonto returns to the desolate location, perhaps with knowledge that can explain why a young boy's remains have washed up on the beach.
The Loni by Andrew Michael Hurley.
And then I have a history choice. This is Valiant Ambition, George Washington, Benedict Arnold, and the Fate of the American Revolution. This is the new book by Nathaniel Philbrick. The figure of Benedict Arnold continues to fascinate us. He was a war hero who ends up a turncoat. And there's George Washington, an inexperienced leader of an army who later becomes a new nation's first president. Roll back the clock to September 1776. The vulnerable Continental Army, under an unsure George Washington, evacuates New York after a devastating defeat by the British Army. 3 weeks later, near the Canadian border, one of his favorite generals, Benedict Arnold, miraculously succeeds in postponing the British naval advance down Lake Champlain that might have ended the war. 4 years later, as the book ends, Washington is triumphant and Arnold has fled to the enemy after a foiled attempt to surrender the American fortress at West Point to the British. Valiant Ambition is a complex and dramatic portrait of a people in crisis and the war that births a nation. The focus is on loyalty and personal integrity, and why Arnold's faith in the rebellion was destroyed. Arnold, on his deathbed in 1801, is quoted as saying, "Let me die in this old uniform in which I fought my battles. May God forgive me for ever having put on another."
Valiant Ambition, George Washington, Benedict Arnold, and the Fate of the American Revolution by Nathaniel Philbrick.
And now I turn it over to Kate.
All right, Kate, you're up.
Yeah. I'd like to introduce three picture books. Each is illustrated by an artist who has been chosen by the Sendak Fellowship to participate in this year's month-long residency program at their farm in Cambridge, New York, for illustrators of children's books. And the first one is Thunder Boy Jr., written by Sherman Alexie and illustrated by Juju Morales. And Thunder Boy Jr. was named by his dad, you guessed it, Thunder Boy Sr., otherwise known as Big Thunder. Thunder Boy Jr. gets called Little Thunder, which makes him think of himself as a burp or a fart.
Okay.
Needless to say, he is not fond of his name, and as a matter of fact, he hates it. For most of the book, he is coming up with wonderfully adventurous names for himself that reflect his experiences, like Not Afraid of 10,000 Teeth, or Touch the Cloud, or my favorite, Mud in the Ears, just to name a few. Each name is illustrated with bold, colorful, lively images that reflect Little Thunder's adventures and the creative names he comes up with for himself. And what I love about this book is the portrayal of the adults who are illustrated supporting the children in their adventures. And in the end, it is the father who acknowledges his son's dislike for his name and offers him the opportunity to have a new name. Let's just say that it appears that Thunder and Lightning will have many more adventures together. Thunder Boy Jr. is really a lovely and loving book.
Thunder Boy Jr., okay.
The second picture book I have today is called The Blue Whale, which is written and illustrated by Jenny Desmond. And this book sparks one's scientific curiosity and imagination. The text reads like nonfiction, where you find out that the blue whale is 100 feet long, is uniquely marked, and weighs about 160 tons. That its bones couldn't support its weight on land, along with a myriad of other facts. But it is the softly painted, penciled, and collaged illustrations that make this book come alive. A young boy with a red crown who is a bit reminiscent of Max in Maurice Sendak's own book, Where the Wild Things Are, travels through the pages, making the comparison of 160 tons to 55 hippopotami, or toting gallons of milk, 50 of them, lined across the pages to represent the 50 gallons needed by a baby whale on a daily basis. This book makes the blue whale come alive and also models that it's cool to want to know more about the natural world around us. It's a great book for the budding environmentalist and also for the classroom.
And it is Blue Whale by Jenny Desmond.
Mm-hmm. And the last book is called Eight, An Animal Alphabet by Elijah Cooper. And the eight in this title refers to the number eight. And this is an alphabet and counting book. Each page has an upper and lowercase letter printed on it with a collection of animals beginning with that letter done in what looks like ink and watercolor. Across the bottom of the page appears a list of the animals that are depicted on that page, and on each one there is a species of animal that is pictured eight times. And why eight, might you ask? Well, Elijah Cooper answers that question for us.
Yes.
He says, why the number eight? Because eight is great. Because eight is round and adorable. Because eight is fun to count to. Move over, 10. Because eight is not too big and not so small. Because eight is my favorite number. So, Eight, An Animal Alphabet is a great book for learning animal names, locating the animals on the page, counting and learning facts about the animals through its picture index.
Eight, An Animal Alphabet by Elisha
Cooper.
Cooper. Elisha Cooper. Sounds very good. What else? So, what else do we need to know?
So, the those three illustrators that Kate just mentioned will actually be with us at Batten Kill Books on Thursday, June 2nd at 7 o'clock for a panel discussion, which will be moderated by Joe Donahue. Thank
wow.
you, Joe.
I hear he can be okay.
Yeah. We're looking forward
yeah.
to it.
Comes highly recommended.
Shows up drunk every once in a while, but other than that, he's all right.
Not to children's.
No,
that,
no.
not to children's. Yeah. So we have that coming up. We have another really
although
cool...
having attended a brunch with your last well never mind go ahead
like, we can arrange anything we have a great event coming up at the end of this month it's not book related per se but it's called If These Walls Could Talk Stone Walls of New York and New England that will be a talk given by Professor John Delano who's Associate Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Albany. And John is doing his talk Sunday, May 29th at 2 o'clock at the Freight Depot Theater at Hubbard Hall in Cambridge, New York, which is just behind Batten Kill Books.
All kinds of great stuff. Check them out at battenkillbooks.com. And better yet, go visit them. They're right on Main Street in Cambridge. Batten Kill Books. I give you directions, but you can find it.
Just, we're not hard to find.
We're on the
no,
web.
It's just,
we're on Main Street.
Right there, right on Main Street, for goodness sakes. when you get to the railroad tracks, just look around. For more information, battenkillbooks.com, battenkillbooks.com. We post this list and all of our segments at wamc.org/roundtable. And, of course, Connie and Kate will posted on their website as well,
battenkillbooks.com.
Thank you both for being here. Always great to see you.
Thank
welcome.
You.
Look
thank
forward
you.
To being there soon for the event with the Sendak Fellows.
Super.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.